In the late 1960s, many Seattleites were anxious to avoid the race riots breaking out in cities across the country, from Los Angeles to Detroit. So they tried to tamp out the kinds of rumors suspected of causing unrest. From KUOW's Race and Equity team, Ann Dornfeld brings us the story of the long-forgotten Seattle Rumor Center. And a warning, this story contains sensitive language that might not be appropriate for all listeners.
In 1968, racial tensions were already high in America. That spring, they reached a fever pitch with the assassination of Martin Luther King Jr. Riots broke out in more than 100 cities in reaction to the murder of the civil rights leader.
Members of his staff crisscrossed Baltimore's complex of ghettos, urging Negro self-restraint and compliance with the law.
That's when Seattle and dozens of other cities adopted a strategy first used in Chicago the previous year, a so-called rumor control center. Citizens were asked to call in with rumblings they'd heard, especially about things that might foment rebellion.
And then if we know that there is a buildup of divisive rumors somewhere in the city, we can act preemptively and deploy police or welfare agents into that part of the city to try and, as they would see it, cool racial tensions before a riot broke out.
Stephen Young is an assistant professor of geography and international studies at the University of Wisconsin-Madison. He stumbled upon records from the Seattle Rumor Center when he was working on a very different research project about the Cold War. He says there had long been concerns that Soviet agents were spreading rumors to incite uprisings in this country.
And this was kind of a spin on that, that there were certain militant Black Power activists who themselves might have also had connections with Soviet interests, who were spreading rumors to sort of fan violence in the city.
The Rumor Center was privately run, primarily by white people. It was funded by the city in private donations in collaboration with the police department. Volunteers were trained not only to record rumors, but also to refute those they knew to be false. It didn't take long for the phones to start ringing. Here's a reading from those logs.
July 4, 1968. 10 a.m. Heard there were outside agitators involved in disturbance. 10:15 a.m. Carload of Negroes stared at lady with flag out. 10:20 a.m. Saw group of Black people in Somerset.
Many callers wanted to know whether it was safe to travel through Seattle's Central District, then home to most of the city's Black residents. Some rumors stemmed from small scuffles that had been exaggerated. A couple kids throwing rocks at cars could become a riot through the grapevine. Other rumors were completely untrue, even paranoid.
5:51 p.m. Woman who lives in Highline heard that a group of colored people are going to go through the whole area, raping all the white women.
The most insidious rumor over the years was that groups of Black men were castrating white men and boys. Stephen Young says those concerns are ironic.
We know that through the 40s and 50s and 60s, Black people were overwhelmingly the people who were targeted for violence, both by the police, but also through various white neighborhood groups that organized to try and keep Black people from their communities.
Seattle never did have a riot during the 1960s or 70s. The Seattle Rumor Center closed after 5 years. Young says although it may seem like a relic, parallels to the present day abound, from the spread of fake news to police violence against people of color.
Even though in the abstract it was aimed at keeping the city calm, really it served the interests of the white population. And it took very seriously their anxieties, even as those anxieties and that unease was based on fabricated stories and paranoid ideas about what was going to happen to them.
It was those fears that became the focus for government concern and intervention, Young says.
On the other hand, Black people, in terms of their anxieties and very credible concerns around experiencing police brutality or other forms of personal or structural violence, weren't really taken seriously.
Young says even today, tension in a white neighborhood is read very differently from tension in a Black neighborhood. And he says governments respond accordingly. I'm Ann Dornfeld, KUOW News.